Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. We're discussing the aspect of Abdiyat. Abdiyat translates as slavery, not just servitude. And explains the basic difference between a slave and a servant. A servant may still have a choice. He's a worker. So in the type of work that's assigned to him, he may still have the choice. He could refuse, say, no, I'm not prepared to do this. Perhaps the salary is too small, or perhaps I'm not trained to do this, I'm not happy to do this. But the slave doesn't have a choice. Whatever is told to him, he just has to execute. So now, when we look at ourselves, we are the slaves of Allah Ta'ala, not just workers and servants. We are his slaves. So he's got the right to do whatever he wants. Today, for example, he has blessed us with wealth. Take this and help yourself, enjoy yourself. It's his right. He is the Rabb, we are the slave. So he's given us that wealth to enjoy. So we can enjoy. And tomorrow he says, all right, return back that wealth to me. So he's still the Rabb, and he's got the right to ask for that wealth to be returned. And like we happily accepted it, we have to happily return it. We can't say, Allah, you know, why have you moved away this favor from me? And I was enjoying, and you turned this favor away from me. You can't say this. Understand your position. You were a slave. It's mine. And I took it when I gave it to you when I wanted. And I moved it away from you when I wanted. It was not yours right from the very beginning. And at least appreciate that I allowed you to enjoy this wealth for some time. That is why when a person passes away, the word that we use, Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. It's two parts. Inna lillahi, that's the first part. We belong to Allah Ta'ala. So He is the owner and we are the property, right? And when it is a person's property, then he can utilize it however he wants. Nobody can question him that, why do you use your property in this manner? You got a piece of cloth, you can make a kurta out of it. Can make a topi out of it, or you can make a trouser out of it. So the cloth doesn't have the right to ask, why did you make a trouser out of me? Why did you make a topi out of me? You should have made a kurta out of me. It doesn't have the right. The owner will say, you belong to me. I got the right to use you as I want. So this is slavery, right? Today, for example, he's given you fuel for energy, right? So he's right. He's granted you fuel that you can be energetic, you can jump, you can walk fast, you can be brisk in whatever you're doing. Right? Tomorrow, Allah Ta'ala has taken away that energy. Now you can't ask Allah, you know, I was so strong and I was so well and this strength of mine has been taken away. Again, you understand that you were a slave. When we wanted, we gave you that energy. And when we so desired, we pulled away that energy from you. So you don't have a choice to make this type of complaints. You see in the incident of Ayyub alayhi salam, Allah Pak had granted him health, wealth, and children. Right? Health, wealth, and children. We had everything of the world. His health went away. His children went away. As well as his wealth. Everything gone now. And everybody left him because there's no wealth now. And his wealth also is gone. Health also is gone. And children are also gone. The only person that stayed on his side was his wife. Perhaps his wife's name was Rahmat. It was Yusuf al-Islam's daughter. Right? So she was the only one that stayed. Everybody, everything, and every friend moved away. Generally, the worldly relationship is such. You hear of Mirza Mazhar Jana Jana Rahmatullahi, that in his youth, he was quite a handsome person, very well looking, very handsome person. So, as such, he had a lot of friends, And then, as he grew up, fully grown now, then the friends also started moving away. But there was one person that used to be still around with him, throughout. So it happens that when there is material around, then people are around you, but the material goes away, then the friendship also goes away. So then you ask now, what's the need to continue with this friendship when he doesn't have that wealth now? Before he had that wealth, he wished to go and enjoy, go for a party, go for an outing, go for a meal to a restaurant, whatever, should do these things. But now he doesn't have all these things. Now why should we insist on this friendship? So generally, a friendship is based on some material faith, some material good. Right? But that material bounty is not around, so what's the need to continue with the friendship? So this one person remained loyal and he remained all the time. Now, Mirza Mazhar Rahmatullah Ali, he went on the path of righteousness and piety and he became the saint of the time. Then suddenly when he became the saint of the time, he thought of this one loyal friend that stuck around with him. Right? He thought of him and he thought now, right, this person was loyal in his friendship. Now I've reached some position, so like the Naqshbandis do, they do tawajjuh. They cast a certain feeling into your heart, see, with the power of the mind, like how you mesmerize or hypnotize, then they cast a certain feeling into the heart, right? The chishtiya, they're not too interested in this. They say it's not a requirement. It's not a requirement for tasawuf. It is a strategy, right? A strategy to get the person on the right. And this type of strategy we're not too comfortable with. The reason that we're not too comfortable with this type of a strategy is because it is short-lived. Like, it's a very cold day, extremely cold day. And you stand by a fire. As long as you're around with the fire, then you feel the warmth. Move away, then that warmth also is gone. So the same with tawajjuh, that you will feel the feelings of it for some time, right? A day or so, half a day, 1 day, 2 days. And slowly the thing will move away. So the chishtiya, they're not too comfortable with this strategy. As I say, it's a permissible strategy, and as it is a permissible strategy, if they use it, you won't say they're doing something haram. And the chishtiya will say that, well, we will use another strategy, because we know that we need to motivate a disciple. A murid comes in, so we need to motivate him, we need to get him going. But we're not doing this tawajjuh, like how they do it. The tawajjuh, they make a circle, and then the sheikh will then he will cast that thought, that feeling into the mind of the disciples. It's all right, as a replacement, as a substitute, what we will do is we will make an earnest dua for the people that come around us. So that dua is connecting with Allah Ta'ala. Right? When it connects with Allah Ta'ala, then the feeling of it will not just be temporary, it will be permanent. Maybe it's slow, the process is slow, right, slowly it will pass on and it will mature, right? But it's a permanent thing as compared to a tawajjuh. A tawajjuh is a temporary thing, and after a short moment the thing will just subside. And a dua is connecting with Allah Ta'ala. You're asking Allah Ta'ala to do it. And what Allah Ta'ala will favor will be totally different. So we also see the need to pass on these favors. But we do it in a different way. We do it to dwars. Hence, in the soul, when we see these type of things, then we need to be careful of two things. One is that we shouldn't be asking this type of questions why our sheikh is not doing this. They're doing it, and you feel, you know, for that moment, you feel so nice. Heart feels so nice, a very cool, a very soothing feeling you will feel, right? So why isn't he doing? What we need to understand is what counts by Allah Ta'ala is not the feeling. The thing that really counts by Allah Ta'ala is the action. So no matter what feeling you go through, it's not an act of reward. You want to get a sawab for that. One day you made sajda, you had a lot of good feelings. As though you felt you were in cloud 7. Right? The next day you don't have that feeling. Right? So don't get confused with these feelings. You need to say that I am the slave of Allah Ta'ala, not the slave of feelings. I am the slave of Allah Ta'ala, not the slave of my feelings. If you were the slave of your feelings, yeah, you must go for it then. But when you say that, Ana Abdullah, I am the slave of Allah Ta'ala, then whether those feelings come or those feelings don't come, it is immaterial. It's not the thing that you're running after, right? Now this thing comes to all type of people in this age, and perhaps it comes more in this age because the types of communication have become so much, you know, communication and news and dissemination of information is so much. Okay, what's happening anywhere, you get to know about it. What's happening to you, the whole world gets to know about it. Everybody gets to know. There are so many facts are before you. So you become like a person going to a supermarket and you're seeing 20 varieties of tomato sauce. Right? Because 20 varieties, you don't know what to take. That thing's packaging looks more better. That one there looks a little bit smart, man. This one there looks a little bit shoddy, man. So you don't know what is good, what is not good. If you're taking, you know, if there's going to be a choice of preference, it'll be perhaps because of the packaging. Not because of the taste, because you didn't taste it, you don't know what it is, you don't know what the contents are. So, as a disciple, as a murid, you don't know the subtle differences. And it will take you time to understand the differences, the reasons why one is approaching, one is adopting one strategy, and one is adopting another strategy. You don't know why they're doing it. So this information is so much before you. It's accumulated so much of information heaped up that you don't know which one to take. It's only out that one. Yeah, I'm noticing some very good feelings. And yeah, I'm not seeing anything. Right. That is why they say that the safer thing is when you are going through some spiritual experience, you must not share it with anybody besides your sheikh. Nobody, not one single person. Make some beautiful dreams, or you're seeing some light, you're seeing something that is a little bit abnormal, right? That's not normal. So you don't share this experience with anybody. The harm in it is this, that if you want to share this with anybody, then either that person is going to feel, hey, this person is come new and he's going so high. He may think that the sheikh has got more tawajjuh on him, is making more dua for him, therefore this person is just escalating. It's moving up. And he's not making this dua for us. So he will feel that the sheikh is a little bit prejudiced. He's not making dua for him as he's making dua for this person here. Whereas it may not be the reason, right? So they say that you mustn't share this, right? Number two, the second reason is, this person is going through this experience, he may think to himself that I am a better person, right? I'm something else. I'm different from the rest. The rest of them are just normal, and I am someone exclusive. I'm going at a rapid speed. Right? I'm going at another speed. I'm going. Right? So that is now self-admiration. When it's going to be self-admiration, you're going to be thinking yourself to be higher than the rest. Then you're not progressing. You're catching it down. You're going down. See? So they say you need to share it, then just share it with your sheikh. Just don't share it with anybody else. So now these are experiences that you go through the path. Sayyid Ahmad Shaheed Sahib Rahmatullahi, he was the Mujaddid of the time. The 13th century, he was the Mujaddid, revivalist, right? And he just started off the tasawwuf and all that. And the 27th night of Ramadan, he saw the things actually falling down in prostration. Trees and whatever else, he saw all that. So he related to his Shaykh, Shah Abdul Aziz Sahib Rahmatullahi. Shah Sahib told him, تِلْكَ الْعَابٌ يُرَبَّى بِهَا أَطْفَالُ السُّلُوكِ. These are all toys, right? Toys, and the children of tasawuf, the kindergarten of tasawuf, is pampered with these things. They're pampered, right? Now, if you don't know that it was just a pampering, you're just being pampered a little bit, right? Using, hey, you know, I am of a, you know, I'm too significant, I'm higher than the rest. But what it is, what it turned out to be, is just a little bit of a pampering. You've been just pampered a little bit to move you, to push you. Why does the parent pamper the child going to kindergarten or school? Just to push the person up, that his morale must just pick up. Not to show him that you are for a different grade altogether, for a different category altogether. It may be two children that are going to school. One may be in matric, and this one is going to kindergarten. So the one in matric may think, hey, but why are they spoiling him? Why aren't they spoiling me? But you don't need the pampering. You pass that age. They don't need to give you the lollipop and chewing gum and all that. They need to give it to the small child. You understand now? Look at his age, look at your age. So sometimes someone needs a pampering, and this becomes available. The Mashayikh makes it available. Allah Ta'ala gives it to that person at the beginning. And slowly that thing reduces. Mostly it reduces, right? But very gradually, it's not noticeable. So anyway, we're getting this Mirza Sahib Rahmatullahi. And he noticed that this friend here, he was loyal. When there was the material, and when the material went away, the friendship wasn't fluctuating. It wasn't based on any material, it was something else. So he was very loyal to the friendship. So now I must make some tawajjuh on him as a reward, as a return for his loyalty. Right? So anyway, he made tawajjuh. Now when he made tawajjuh, so he saw that Mirza Sahib is noticing that whatever he had, whatever spiritual strength he had, that went away. Bajay dene ke lena ho gaya, lene ke dena ho gaya. Everything that he had, everything went away. Now you see, hey, what happened? I went to give him, I got left. Everything went away from me. Yeah. Right? So he followed the tawajjur, where this is coming from. He noticed that there was an old friend, all right? This is who he did. So he's telling his friend, hey, what you going to do to me? Whatever I had, the strength and the stamina I had, you took it away, you cut it off from me. What happened? So the friend tells you, see, when we were children, then we used to play around, right? And we used to harass you. You all used to harass me. The friend is saying, you all used to harass me. How you harass me now? My stuff now, one shoe you'll throw in this place here. There'll be some toy of mine, you'll throw it away, you'll hide it away. So you'll do things, hide something, throw it one place, and I'll have to go and search everything. So now you'll have to do this for me every week. You have to do it. When you'll do it, you'll do it on a Jummah, on a Friday, at the Jama Masjid, India. Jama Masjid, Delhi, is about the biggest masjid in India, in Delhi, right? So there's a crowd of about 100,000 people coming in there. You can imagine like a small Haram Sharif, right? Crowd. Or even more, 100,000 or even more. Right? So I am at this spot here on the Jummah after the Namaz, you must do the same thing. You find my possessions, my property and all around. So you're going to throw one thing here, one that side, one this side. Mirza Sahib is thinking, how am I going to do this? Because we're all grown up people, 40 years. And if you act at 4 years now, then how is it going to... Notwithstanding, the Mirza Sahib Rahmatullahi had a very refined temperament, extremely refined temperament. So perhaps this was like a treatment for him. And Mirza realized that this person is also a Buzrug. He is so big that I got overwhelmed in his spirituality. His ocean of spirituality was so great that I tried and I got drowned. So he's so great, right? So he understood. But now this person is refusing to let go until and unless I don't do this. No choice, I've got no choice. So after the Jummah, the whole crowd, imagine over 100,000 people all are walking out of the masjid, right? Now these two big buzrugs, the whole world knows about them. And they're playing around, taking his musalla, throwing one side, taking his topi out of his hat and throwing that side, taking his shoes and throwing this side. Right? And that person is getting annoyed, is asking for it, you know. So people should get a little bit amused. But they don't know the demographics, what's happening, what was the real fault, they don't know. So this, some of these exercises and the strategies that are adopted by these awliya, these different groups, they are right, and they have got a reason. Right? But others feel otherwise, so they don't adopt that. When they don't adopt it, we aren't supposed to be criticizing, why aren't we doing this? Like, these people are doing it, why aren't we doing it? Like, they talk, the next Mandiyas, they talk about the Lataifa Sitta, right? The 6 points, I think they translate them as chakras or something. So, the energy points, right? One is around the navel, then there's one here by the nipple here, then towards the center of the chest, then near the heart somewhere, right? It's under there. Then there is one somewhere here, right? By the forehead, and khafi, and then there's akhfa, right? So these are energy points, right? Now, when you call latifa is something that you can't perceive with your senses. Yeah. Senses, your eyes, your ears, your tongue, your hands, you cannot perceive it with your senses, right? So it's something that is perceived, but not through your senses, right? Like, you know, when you feel a feeling of goodness, if you went through a kafiyat, an inner enjoyment, right? Right? In namaz or something, did you feel that with your senses? It's something beyond your senses, right? You know, that inner happiness. Within, you felt some very cooling and soothing feeling, some inner happiness, inner joy, inner satisfaction. So did you experience that with your senses or something that was beyond your senses? Obviously, it was something beyond your senses. If any other material thing, you perceive it through your senses. Like, it was a beautiful girl with your senses, right? Your eyes or something, right? Or it was a beautiful drink, then with your tongue. Now, this is something that is beyond your senses, right? It's above. Right? So they train their murids in these things, lataif sitta, right? On the nafs, and then the khafi, and the sir, akhfa, all that, right? So they start off training them in that. Right? You work on one, then you move on to the next one, then you move on to the third one, the fourth one, they train them on that. So they feel that they'll get better discipline on the disciples in this manner when they train them in this manner, right? The Chishti says, no, this is a very long path now. Imagine now, en route someone died then, but he's still training and he's gone. We need to expedite this person, push him on now, move him on. So we look for a more comprehensive and a more effective strategy. This is a strategy also. They're using one strategy to get the person moving, right? Because this was an energy point, so you got the energy right. So this movement, energy means movement, right? Like fuel, it means movement. So you got the energy right, then you got movement in the person. But now the Chishti's reasoning is different. The Chishti's reasoning is, it's a very long, long path now. And really, the person dies then. And the other probability is, we finish with the nafs, right? And for example, we came to the sir, right? Now, in the meanwhile, when you came to the sir, if the nafs is failing again now, so leave this and go back down. You know, you worked on one, it came up to a level, then you progressed on to the second. But whilst you're working on the second, the first one gave up. So now, you have to go back, attend to the first one again. So she said, no, we won't use a strategy. We'll go straight on a different route altogether. We'll go on a different route. Like if the person working on a farm, right? Big farm he's got, very big, massive farm, 1,000 hectares, right? He's got. So he's used a strategy to work on the farm. How? So when you've got a farm now, it's a new acquired property. So you'll have to first prepare the field, right? In preparing the field, you'll take out the stones, the thorns, the bush, and you'll have to then soften the earth, plow the earth, then you start your farming. You can't just start farming like that. So now one approach of farming is that you cleaned up perhaps 1 hectare, right, and start farming there, and then you went on to the second hectare, right, to start off there. But when you went on to the second hectare, you found that there was problems again in the first one. So you have to leave the second and you have to come back to the first. So this complicates the whole work, see. It complicates, it confuses the person. Now, there's another approach you can use to do the same thing. You have to farm and you have to do the agriculture there in that whole farm. And do it in a different way. The other way is now, all right, let's do this. You know, this is going to take a very long time. So now, let's circumvent this whole thing, this whole process. So the idea is to clean the place and then soften the earth so that we can start the farming. So can't we use an easier strategy? So the chistis will say, all right, let's throw kerosene and burn the whole thing down. So in minutes, the thing will be burnt out. The 1,000 hectares will just finish, right, through kerosene, and you burn the whole thing down. When you burn the whole thing down, now at least a major hurdle is out. The thing is that all the crop, all the thorns, the bush, shrubs, weeds, everything that was on the road, you got that all cleared out. Now it's just a matter of raking the whole thing with a truck or something. You clean the whole thing out. Right? It's going to be so much more easier. So it's a strategy. They use one strategy. We use another strategy. Strategizing is permissible. You won't say it's compulsory. Right? You won't say you have to do this and you can't do this. It's just a strategy. It's just an approach. So the chishtis, they use a different way. They say, see, we speak about the spiritual points. Then in the spiritual points, there is one point that is called qalb, right? And the hadith speaks about qalb. Iza saluhat saluhal jasadu kullu. That thing goes right, everything goes right, right? So this qalb that the hadith is speaking about is not the physical qalb. It's not speaking about the Dr. Vanke heart. It's talking about some other heart. Otherwise, if it was the Dr. Vanke heart, he could have fixed it up. And the hadith is saying if that thing goes right, then the whole body will go right, right? So that means it needs some other attention. And that means also that it's another heart that the hadith is referring to, not the physical heart that is visible to us. Something else. Otherwise, everybody's got a heart problem, must have a spiritual problem. Right? That's what it would amount to. Any person who has a heart problem, he's got a spiritual problem. Whereas he may be a buzurg of the time, and he's got a heart problem. So it's two different things. See? So it refers to the spiritual heart. Right? It's an energy point. It's a spiritual heart that it refers to. Strange, I'm discussing this thing here. No any fayda in this. Ilyas, fayda che. Yeah. So the chishtis say that the target is the heart, because the hadith says if this thing goes right, it'll set the whole heart right, the whole system will go right. So that's like the nucleus. The heart is the nucleus. Go for that directly. Go for that, the whole system will come right. Right. So they circumvent the whole thing, like how you throwing kerosene and burning the whole thing down one shot. Right. One is now You want to bring, it's a big building, right? You want to do some building. It's an old building, and you want to put up a new skyscraper, you want to put up in place, right? So one is now you tell 20 boys to take hammer, chisel, and break that thing. How long it will take you? Kiamat will come perhaps, right? And the other, you got this, what they call this? Demolitions, right? There has come, now they got implosion, right? One is a demolishing, and one is an implosion. Right? Implosion, what I hear is that they wire the whole place up with some type of a bomb, and it just caves in. The whole building just caves in like that. Within 5-10 minutes, the whole thing comes down. So, different strategies. Now, you won't say that, you know, using a hammer and a chisel is impermissible haram, and that implosion is for us. Can you say that? It's a strategy. So, the Chishtis use one strategy, and the Naqshbandis use another strategy. It's a strategy. Strategies are permissible. Right? You can't say why they use this and why we use this. Everybody uses strategies, right? Like Jamaat now, they seen that we need to strategize, because you know we're going to be just randomly doing the work, then the work can't have a direction. Right? The work needs to have direction. Whether you're in China, one part of the world, or you in the United States, right? It must be one standard. Because if a Jamaat from South Africa has to go to China or to LA, they must feel comfortable in the work. But if China got one approach of working and then LA got another approach of style of working, right? All within the range of permissibility, but it will be complicating for the participants. But they are working in a different style, and those people are working in a different style, right? So you can understand how it will become complicated. So that you need to have one style. So those that are in the work, they'll understand why we have to adhere to this style. We don't complicate things, don't make it difficult. Though, in effect, the permissibility is both ways. This is also permissible, that is also permissible. You will not say it's not impermissible. We have to do it in a different style. For example, if they do it in a different style now, the Jamaat is going to be coming on television, right? The bayan, you don't have to come to the masjid. Mullah Ilyas will appear on television at this time. Well, everybody was... No, they think, hey, but South Africa, they don't do it this time, man. They're doing it in a different style. Yeah, they're doing it in a different style. Won't it complicate? Won't it confuse people? They did it in a different way because of certain understanding. Okay, we need to work in a certain way, right? Like, for example, a simple thing, right? If you see a da'wah, well, takum minkum ummatun yad'una ila al-khayr wa ya'muruna bil ma'ruf wa yanhawna 'anil munkar. In the da'wah, you need to have these two counterparts, right? Encouraging the good and forbidding the evil, right? You have to call people towards good and forbid them from evil, right? But now, in the present situation, you notice that in the Jamaat work, they will call people to good and they will leave out forbidding from evil, right? Now, we mustn't go and just criticize the Jamaat. Why don't they have Nahi Anil Munkar? Don't do that. Try and understand why they applied a certain way. And also see, have they got great, great ulama and they're supporting, etc. So when they got their supporting, they have used a certain strategy for a certain reason. Now, without understanding all this, and you just condemn someone, just criticize someone, is not fair. Really, is not fair. You didn't understand what's going on. When you didn't understand what's going on, then you just come and run the person down. Is that right? Now, look at it. Look at the situation, right? The person is not coming to the masjid at all. But they're all coming to the masjid. And they made ghast, they made a lot of magajmari, months of efforts. Eventually, they got a person just for the Jummah. Now, he's coming regularly for the Jummah. Right? Now, the Jamaat Sati that will see this person coming in for the Jummah, he will welcome him, he'll compliment him. Hey, bhai, mashallah, how well, you know, how nice to see you. And welcome, you know, welcome. You must come and eat by my place after Jummah, right? Now, there's two ways to look at it, right? One way is how this Jamaat Sati will entertain this person to the masjid. The other person will say, hey, you know, he's allowing him to leave out namaz for the entire week and and complimenting him only for one namaz. He's complimenting him for what? For one namaz and leaving out the namaz of the rest of the week. What is he doing? He's doing a disservice to Islam. Now he doesn't understand the whole story. When he didn't understand the whole story, he went to run him down. So if he understood the whole story, he'll get it in perspective. Okay, things happen in stages, slowly, slowly. You got him for Juma now. Now the next step now is to get him for at least one namaz. We'll get him all right. The easiest namaz in the day for him perhaps is Isha. So let's now work slowly, gradually, and get him for Isha namaz. So it's a strategy, how to get the person on and hook him on completely. But you're going to use one high strategy and expect the person to turn overnight, then I don't say karamat and miracles are impossible, but they're mainly done by Anbiya alayhi salam, right? Anbiya, they did miracles, right? Where the person was a sharabi kababi, and in a split second he changed him around, that he begins to disgust that like he liked that. That was the work of a nabi. From where to where, just change the person around, right? So now the same strategy is used by the Jamaat. They thought, no, hey, you know, because it's a international group, right? International movement. And if you're not going to lay down the ground rules, you don't want to lay it down, then there will be a big complication here. Because the hadith is saying that you see a wrong, man ra'a minkum munkaran falyughayyirhu biyadi, must change it with your hand, right? See a wrong, then you go and correct the thing with your hand. So for example, now you saw him playing with a guitar, right? Playing in the corner and guitar is jiving away, right? So you took his guitar and you broke the thing. For you, so you must correct it with your hand. What will happen to you? You took and you broke it. What will happen? He'll break you, isn't it? Is it right or not? Now they understood the complication. If you're going to leave it open, right, there's going to be complications. We can't get working. We need to get work here. And with all different type of multinationals, all type of nationalities, we'll have to work with them. Right? We'll have to get them on. Now you're going to use this style here, right, then it's not going to be working here. But then now the question will come, all right, you know, فَلْيُغَيِّرْهُ بِيَدِي, you must correct it with your hand. Then how does it apply then? Because the hadith is saying, you must correct it with your hand. How does it apply? So, he will tell you, see, فَلْيُغَيِّرْهُ بِيَدِي, it doesn't apply to everybody. It applies to the person who's got that level of authority. If it's your child now, right, don't you have an authority? If he's playing with a guitar and jiving around, you can whack him and you can break the thing, right? No consequences, right? It's your own child. Why? You got that authority. But you don't have an authority. You even broke his guitar. He doesn't know about haram and halal, right? Or he's got a bottle of wine, right? And you took that bottle of wine, yeah? A juba or something, right? Maybe, you know, wine is expensive. You hear about 200 and 300 in one bottle, right? So you took that thing and you bust that thing. You thought you did a good thing. Say, pay me for the damages. Say, hey, I did something good. Why must I pay for it? And I must pay for haram here. I can't pay for haram. So there's going to be a whole controversy, a whole fight here. To end this thing up here is going to be another problem. Now, this is we need to use another strategy here. See? So the strategy that everybody, that is agreeable, what? A strategy is that is agreeable. And they got this also from the Quran Sharif. A strategy that is agreeable, and the Jamaat got it from the Quran. How they got it? See, when the da'wah is extended to the Ahl-e Kitab, ta'alu ila kalimatin sawa'in baynana wa baynakum alla na'buda illallah. Let's come on to a common platform. Let's come to a common platform that will worship only one Allah Ta'ala. Like the Old Testament, the New Testament says, listen, O Israel, your Lord, our God, is one. So, Allah na'abuda illallah. See, we're calling them on a common ground, common platform. Their testament also is saying the same thing, that God is one. Your Lord, our God is one. Allah na'budu illallah. So we start off, when we start off calling them, we call them on a common platform. Allah na'budu illallah. Right? So now, wala nushrika bi shay'a. So when you're calling on one, then there is no chance of polytheism in it, because it's just one God. The second big problem in Christianity, right, the second big problem in Christianity was what? وَلَا يَتَّخِذَ بَعْضُنَا بَعْضًا أَرْبَابًا مِنْ دُونِ اللَّهِ. They took up their monks and they took up their priests as gods. Right? That was the second big problem, major problem. Adi ibn Hatim, radiallahu anhu, he was originally Christian, then he came on to Islam. So he came complaining to Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, Ya Rasulullah, the Quran says that we took up our monks and priests as gods. لَا تَتَّخِذُوا آبَاءَكُمْ وَأَبْنَاءَكُمْ was that ayat? اتَّخَذُوا أَحْبَارَهُمْ وَرُهْبَانَهُمْ أَرْبَابًا مِّن دُونِ اللَّهِ اتَّخَذُوا أَحْبَارَهُمْ وَرُهْبَانَهُمْ أَرْبَابًا مِّن دُونِ اللَّهِ The Quran Sharif says, it makes a charge against us that we have taken our monks and our priests as gods. But we don't worship them. But why does the Quran Sharif say that we have taken our monks and priests as gods? So Rasulullah has explained, Adi radiallahu anhu, that is it not a fact that your testament is saying something and then contrary to your testament is the word of your priest, right? For example, the priest is telling you that pork is permissible. But the testament, there's clear text in the testament to show that pork is impermissible. Now, whose word are you giving preference to? God's word or the priest's words? If you're giving preference to the priest's words, that means you are saying that the priest is over God. His authority comes above the authority of God. So he's another God. He's higher than God. Not only God, but in fact higher than God he is. So, وَلَا يَتَّخِذَ بَعْضُنَا بَعْضًا أَرْبَابًا مِنْ دُونِ اللَّهِ. We don't take up gods besides Allah Ta'ala. We don't take up our priests and all that. Right. So you see the da'wat now, the style that they have adopted, that style also is in conformity with the Quran, right? That you're calling a person on a common platform. Right? Now you may ask again, all right, but still that nahi anil munkar still features, you know. There must be a group that will call towards good and forbid the evil, but this thing still remains in suspense. You haven't answered this thing yet. So the Jamaat will say, no, see, we have got a solution in place. Right? We will talk about the kalima, right? Our success and the whole thing that goes after that, right? So when that person is going to listen to this, initially it will be just what he heard. Then he will think about it. Hey, you know, I can only move if I bring about total obedience. So now his mind is going to work, right? You're not telling him that don't shave your beard. You're not telling him that, you know, you mustn't womanize. In the Jamaat, you don't give a bayan. You don't hear in the Istimaat, say don't take drugs, don't womanize. You don't hear them saying that, right? So, in the meanwhile, he's listening to this one sentence that the whole success, the whole progress is subject to your obedience and conformity. If there is obedience and conformity, then you're going to progress. No obedience and conformity, you can't progress. Then you look at, hey, this womanizing and drugging is not in accordance to obedience. So I'll have to just drop it out. I can't progress in this path. See? So it was just a strategy that they used. It's not that they don't do this or they condemn this nahi and munkar. No, they condone it, they support it. But they understand that you don't have the appetite for it. Like I said, you know, play the person that is jiving around with the guitar at the corner of the street, right? He doesn't have the appetite that you just take that guitar and break it. Does he have the appetite for that? Does he have the capacity? He doesn't have the capacity for it. The Jamaat understood, not that he doesn't have the capacity for it. But we can't leave him like this. He's a Muslim after all. So we just leave him. Let him, if he's decaying, let him rot. And let him just get out of Islam. We can't. He's got Islam, right? But he's jahil now. He's ignorant. He's far away. Let us bring him slowly, gradually, let us bring him. If it were, I ask you, if it was your own child, and right, from the drugs that he was taking, right, he was taking heavy stuffs, right? Right. So what you will do? You will take him to a rehab. So the rehab will have a strategy in place, right? Perhaps they will wean him out from the 10 that he was taking, they'll give him one. Slowly they'll wean him out, right? So will you see that the rehab is doing a haram thing? They're allowing him one drug. You know, one drug, dakha, they're giving him. Marijuana, they're giving him. Will you say that? No, they're weaning him out, but it's a weaning process. Gradually, they will take him out. You want him to be out one all at once. That can be critical for his own life. Because for years, he's been addicted to this, and you want him to be stripped out of this straight away. So I say this Buzurgan ad-Din, the styles and all that, don't criticize them. And in their own teachings, I'll show you another teaching. In fact, it's a teaching that all our ulama, not only Buzurgan, even our ulama are saying the same thing. The higher, very higher senior ulama. They say, like, for example, he's working at a bank, right? The whole bank operation is centered with interest, right? The whole operation, if you look at how it operates, right? It can't revolve around, it can't work without interest. If you just separate it from interest, then it will be dysfunctional. Let's have it closed down. Any conventional bank, if there is not the element of interest, I think will just have to close down. Now the man got a job there, right? He's earning a good salary, and his kharcha, his needs, everything are being fulfilled, right? Suddenly he heard in the Jamaat now, you know, come out in Jamaat. Then he heard, hey, there's interest and all that now. So he's got ghabrat now. He said, I must be obedient now. And I am in total disobedience. I'm eating haram. Because my salary, I'm feeding my children out of haram. So some realization came to him. So then he'll refer to some alim. I'm showing you now how life operates. There may be an exception to a case when a person understood that haram, he gave it up altogether at once. But that is one in a 100,000, right? But the normal run, he won't do that. So what the ulama say? Look at any fatwa kitab, they'll say what they will tell you. You must do three things, right? One is that keep the job, don't throw the job away. Right? Number two, ask Allah's forgiveness that what you're doing is wrong, is haram. At least you began to acknowledge the haram, right? Number three, look for an halal alternative. Right. Look for, then ask you, all ulama will tell you, look for haram alternative. Now, can you say that, the ulama is saying that you must stick with haram, remain in haram, right? You know, they must remain with riba. Can you say that? You can't say that. They are moving you out, but systematically. And the reason for it, ask me the reason, I'll tell you the reason. Ask me, because I had this. I know one person, all right, here on Bayam, on something, whether it was riba or something, so he just gave it up straight away. Then he came crying here to the office. This is my old office. He came crying. And he had serious doubts about Islam. Hey, I can't look after my wife, my children. Everything is falling down. Is it the right religion for me? Now imagine the statement that he made. But this was because of what? See, the big step he took, which he could not maintain, he couldn't sustain that step. So they told him, all right, now you come in, but you come in gradually like this. So these three steps you must do, maintain the job. You ask Allah Ta'ala's forgiveness, that means you're not defying Allah Ta'ala, you're not in denial. You know? You're not in denial, you're accepting Allah is haram. My weakness that I'm doing it, but what I'm doing is haram. So if you die in the state, at least the malaika recording also, that he did, he wasn't in denial. He was making istighfar for the wrong. Right? And they will also write that he was looking out for a halal alternative. So when you see this akabir, etc., when they're doing something, don't jump to conclusion very quickly and say, no, why are they haram and why are they doing this thing here? You don't know the whole demographic, you don't know the working out, you don't know why they're doing it, and you don't know the halat of people, but you want to lose a member from Islam. He's working in the bank now, you want him to be out of Islam. Do you want that? Now, if you're not going to strategize him and bring him gradually, then that's what you're asking for. You know, you either in Islam or you're out of Islam. That means if you are married, then you're living in haram. That will mean, again, that if you were a child, that the child is an illegitimate product, right? That means also then any food of yours, you know, all the food that you're eating is all haram, right? You can't be doing any sadaqa, you can't do anything. So you see the other, that extreme step and what it will do to the community. So you know, you go come in, but you come in gracefully, slowly, slowly in stages you do it. Because you don't have the appetite to take that major jump at once. You can't take that major stroke at once. But you are a Muslim. Since you are a Muslim, you need to come. We have a problem. The maktab, how many times you have a problem? Many times you have a problem that normally you'll find women accepting Islam, you know, quicker than men. They see the good. Perhaps they are a little bit more closer to nature. So you get this black woman, a lot of them accepting Islam. Right? But I don't have the heart to tell them, move away from your kafir husband. Whereas it is against the Quran Sharif. Bi'isamil kawafir. Was that ayat? Wala tumsiku bi'isamil kawafir. You can't maintain the marriage contracts with kafirs. Right? But I don't have the heart to tell them, just move, break away from your kafir husbands. I ask you, what's going to happen to their home? They just accepted Islam now. They got a home, they got a shelter, got a husband, etc. But you tell them, just break away from your kafir husband now, straight away. I asked, do they have the capacity, the appetite for that? Do they have that? So if you bring them in, gradually you have to somehow patawa them, get the husband into Islam, renew the nikah, etc. You have to do all these things here. But you can't do it in one stroke. But now the person that doesn't understand all this, he hasn't been working, then he'll go to that extreme step. He doesn't realize what's going on. He doesn't know what's going on. So we started off with Naqshbandi and Chishtiya, and then we went on to Dawat. And what I'm talking about is strategies. Right? And these different people will use different, even the Khanqa, they use strategies. One person came in the Khanqa. So they saw now there's a whole disarray in the Khanqa. One person's shoe is lying above the roof, third floor there. One person is by the gate, his shoe is that side. Other person's shoe is by the kitchen on that side. Hey, you know, what happened? What's happening? 2-3 days, something's happening here. So the Khanqa people, they thought of setting a trap now. Who's doing this? At night, all this, some mischief is taking place. So they spotted one person, he's doing all these things, taking on shoe, putting on the third floor, taking another handbag or something, and he's putting it in the kitchen, whole mixing up things. So the sheikh summoned him, came, said to the sheikh, don't hurry in taking any decision against me. You see, I came from a background of being a thief. All my whole life, I was a thief. I was a robber, right? Like, imagine now, that's an addiction in me. 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, those thoughts are running active in me. Right? When they're running active in me, then I don't feel at ease until I don't do something. You know, like a person smoking, right? He never smoked, he can't sleep. Why can't sleep? I never smoke. But because you're not smoking, you don't understand what it is. So, just to appease myself, now I came here, I took bath at your hands. He's telling the sheikh. And you told him, I mustn't steal. But I don't steal now. But if I don't do this, I can't be at ease at all. So the sheikh said, okay, just excuse him. He's coming up, he's still running it. So they will use strategies to get him on. There's another incident of a thief, right? I mean, you talk of Muslims in multitudes, right? Hundreds of millions, right? All types will come. Now, slowly you have to correct them. Now you think, small, beautiful family at Arans, all naked people there. You can't compare them over the whole world. All types are going to come. Like you see in the Haram Sharif, all types will come. You'll find someone is breaking the law and someone is shining the police. Just forget it now. You'll see in front of your eyes. And those Medina police, let's say, oh, they were big buff, finish. They're so soft. So he's a robber and he came in, right? He came in. Now the sheikh understands his background. So he should strategize and get him right. The Sheikh told him, see, all right, I am accepting you for bayat. One condition. The moment the time of namaz sets in, straight away, you must call azan loudly and start your namaz. You can understand that for him to drop off that habit of stealing at once, he can't do it. Right. So now this person, he has to, his whole hobby or his whole work is to steal. That's his living, livelihood. So he's seen this wedding, some wealthy person's house. So old Indian style now, everybody will be coming with, you know, with gold and jewelry and all that. And it'll be a two, three day affair. It's a winter night, so the night is very long. And 2 o'clock in the morning, everybody's drunks, they're sleeping, dead like logs they are, right? Meanwhile, all the jewelry will be scattered around. I'm going to do my job, and I'm finished. But there was such a big pile up there, you know. Olden days now, not now. Now nobody wears jewelry now. Such a big pile up. So it took him time, got everything, got his sack, loaded everything. As he just stepped out of the house, now he sees up and he sees his father's time. But the sheikh told this instruction he gave him, you know. Olden days people were very loyal. Whatever promises they made, they held on to that promise. So he gave azan at the top of his voice and he started namaz. Now people got up now. Now when they got up straight away, what are you going to look for? If a person had a gun and he left it when he's sleeping, what is he going to do? First thing he'll look for is his gun. So a woman, the first thing she'll look for is her jewelry. Hey, jewelry is missing. Mine is also missing. Hey, yours is also missing. Hey, hers is also missing. Now they're looking for the jewelry, everything is missing. So they see this person performing namaz and they see a bag and everything is inside. Oh, let him finish namaz, we'll give it to him. Now in the meanwhile, there's a discussion within the ranks of the inmates of the house, all the guests and all. Say, no, he can't be a rogue, this person here. Because if he's a rogue, he won't read namaz and all that. How can he be reading namaz and leaving his loot here? It must be Khizr alayhi salam, this, you know. Because he got the whole loot from the rogue, and is returning it back to us. See, he caught him, intercepted the person. So it was namaz time, reading namaz, he caught the loot, and is returning it back to us. It's a long story, but I'm just showing you now. See, they had to strategize to get this person on track again. Now, it deals a lot with philosophy, human mind, how it works, how it operates. If you don't know these things here, please, I say, for Allah Baksi, don't criticize, don't condemn them. They know what they're doing. And how I say that they know what they're doing is look at the final product, Jamaat. What is the end product? Right? Between the person who's drugging or drinking, whatever. But what is the final product? A refined person, kurta, going for hajj, crying at tahajjud, all that you'll find. Don't you find that? So it's a phase. You go from one phase to the other, to the third. Provided you committed, eventually you come out right. Allah Akbar.